back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. So I'm going back to the story I was telling right before the break. So Toby Keith just passed away. I was in Baghdad in 2004, attached to an infantry battalion out smack in the middle of central Baghdad, which on the other side of the river from the Green Zone. If you're familiar with the video you saw countless times of the Saddam statue being torn down in central Baghdad, that was my area of operation. So my FOB was in the old Iraqi Olympic complex, they called it. We basically were right next to the old soccer stadium and all that. So if you were in Baghdad at all, you know exactly where I'm talking about now. But that being said, I'm on our FOB one day, and I was talking to somebody from Division Main. They said, hey, like we have one of those kind of like, all right, we're through talking about business. And the guy goes, hey, man, by the way, did you hear what's happening tomorrow? And I said, what? And he goes, well, they're not promoting it because they don't want a bunch of people caravanning, but yeah, Toby Keith, Ted Nugent. And I went, what? He said, yeah. I said, where? Right here at Victory. What? And so I went to my guys. I went to one of my team sergeants, and I said, hey, you know that business we got down at Division Main? Yeah, we got it tomorrow. Well, all right, sir, what's up? And I said, I'll give you four words. Toby Keith, Ted Nugent. What? Yeah. So this became a thing. I mean, a whole thing. Next thing I know, we got our usual security detail, our favorite guys to roll with was the mortar platoon. And so we spun them up. I'm Titan 6. I got Shooter 6. We got ourselves collaborated. We put together a security convoy. It was all business, you understand. Purely business. Anyway, business in the war zone is not quite the same as, you know, running downtown for a meeting in Birmingham or Huntsville. And so we're getting spun up in the morning, and we've got about a 6 or 7 vehicle convoy, right? It's all Humvees, up armored Humvees, gun trucks. And so we do our security detail brief. We head out and by the way, this is supposed to be like a 45-minute drive. No, couldn't have picked a worse day. We got bypassed for an IED. We got, we had to detour around another area. We got snarled up in some what I would call just like mayhem traffic, because Baghdad was notorious for having what I call mayhem traffic. And it was just heat, and it was bottom line is it was god awful. We just missed one car bomb and rolled past the devastation not long after it had gone off. And so truth be told, we took a 45-minute drive, which we were going to have to do eventually anyway, and we turned it into 2.5 hours. All I know is we get to Victory. We roll through the gates. We go through the security gate. We clear our weapons at the clearing barrels, and I look at my guys and say, we'll do business later. Head there now. And so we headed straight on to where we knew the concert was supposed to be. We rolled up on the site, literally within about 100 yards. We got out of our vehicles. I'm giving a few instructions. I'm telling the guys, take off, head on over there, guys. I'm dropping my helmet and my body armor. And all of a sudden, I can hear the last guitar lick. And I hear one of them, I don't know which one, yell out, we love y'all. Thank you. We'll see you later. And I was like, no. And so we had just gone through all of that to get there in time to hear them say, we're done playing. And so my team was like, everybody's shoulders just fell. We're like, oh, no way. And so as I'm standing there, Ted Nugent and Toby Keith come walking up, and they walk within about 10 feet of us. And they kind of looked over, and they waved at us. And then they got on this armored bus that was going to take them back to their flight. And I looked at one of my guys. We all had nicknames, and this guy's nickname was Animal. And I said, Animal, yes, sir. Team needs autographs. I'm on it. And he just jumps on the bus. No questions asked. Mm-hmm. He just jumps on the bus. He comes back a few minutes later, starts passing out autographs. And I still have, to this day, Ted Nugent on a piece of USO cardstock. And some of the guys got Toby Keith, and I got Ted. And I am forever grateful, by the way, for the way both of them took care of the troops. I mean, they were there. They went to places they didn't have to go. Nobody would have ever questioned them not going. But everybody loved the fact that they did go. And so, yeah, Toby Keith passed away yesterday. Complications due to stomach cancer. 62 years old, just barely older than me. And he was a patriot. He was a family man, married to the same woman since 1984. 3 kids, I believe, and a legend in country music. So I'm thankful. It's one of those things where I don't know him, but I feel like I do. You know what I'm saying? every once in a while there's that personality on the big screen or on the stage somewhere, and you don't know them, but something about their persona makes you feel like you do. And so anyway, that's my Toby Keith story, and I'm appreciative for his love for the troops. Marcus from Huntsville has texted in. He says, I was at that concert too, Phil. It was a good concert. Me and my crew about died when Ted Nugent said, whack 'em and stack 'em, but only three high. This was, of course, right after the issues that Abu Ghraib prison had become global news. Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord, that happened while I was there. Absolutely. Hey, Marcus, thanks for your service, man. Love to know who you were with. Text it in. Tell me what unit you were with. But anyway, there's my Toby Keith story. I had to just go ahead and take a moment of personal privilege and tell it. For probably the second or third time in the 2 years I've been on the air. Brian from Decatur has texted in and says, thought of the day, are Democrats as disappointed daily in their elected officials as Republicans? Probably. Although I will say this, I think Democrats tend to band together better than Republicans do most days. That's kind of crazy, but there it is. We're going to talk about some of the things that happened over the last few days in one of my dippers later in the show, and I'll get into that. Allie from Athens has said, I need some fruit and cheese with this wine, Colonel. She said, I had to stay behind and not attend the concert because MWR had to always be open. Allie, I am so sorry to hear that. So, yeah, my friend Allie, who you've not gotten to meet yet personally, Big Rig, but she was great. She likes to call herself a former hippie war protester who spent 3 years in Baghdad working for the troops. And so, anyway, thank you, Allie. Appreciate your service, my friend. All right, listen, I'm going to jump into this first dipper, and let me lay the groundwork for it. State of the state. So last night, Governor Ivey gave her state of the state address. If you're not familiar with it, and what's kind of crazy is, you know, there I was in the legislature for 8 years, and I, be honest with you, I truthfully was not that familiar with the processes, the state of the state address, none of it. Even though my dad had worked for Governor Fob James, even though I like to think that I was like sort of politically up to speed. I'll be honest, I learned a lot more after I got elected than I ever knew beforehand, which I guess is to be expected, but still. So what happens is this, and what I learned when I was down there, is just like the President of the United States does a State of the Union address, the governor of the state typically does a State of the State address. The State of the State address for Alabama is a little different than what you might see with, like, say, the President of the United States, because it's happening on the opening night of the legislature. And for those who don't already know, the legislature is not a full-time gig. They can't go down there and make laws whenever they feel like it. They can only go into session at given times. There's occasionally a special session called by the governor. Once every 4 years, they have what's called the organizational session, where they get together for a mere few days to pick new leadership and assign committees and that kind of thing. But every year on the calendar, they have what's called the regular session. You see, all of the legislative members in Alabama, House and Senate, are part-timers. It's a part-time gig. Now, Charlene and I used to jokingly call it my full-time part-time job. I was in for 8 years, but Charlene said that politics ought to be measured like dog years. Therefore, I was in for like 50-plus years. But that being said, when you go down there once a year for a period of days, well, if the governor wants to give a state of the state address to an empty room, she can, but it's better to wait till the legislature is in town. So, typically speaking, on the opening day of the legislature's regular session, the governor provides a state of the state address. Now, in that state of the state address, she, Governor Ivey, will talk about what she believes were some great things that may have happened, but more often than not, it's focused on what she wants to have happen for the legislative session. Bills that she's going for, things that she's asking for agenda items on, thanking legislative members for being a part of certain things, and sitting on the dais with her, just like you might see at the State of the Union address in D.C., where the vice president and the speaker of the House and, you know, are sitting up there with her. In this case, you've got the lieutenant governor, the speaker pro tem, or excuse me, the Senate pro tem, and the speaker of the House all sitting up there on the dais, along with honorary members of the legislative process. So I had a chance to sit on the dais too once for Governor Bentley. You just sit up there basically, and you suddenly realize you kind of wish you had brought a bottle of water with you or something because you're stuck. but you're sitting up there on the dais while the president makes a, or the governor makes a speech. In this case, Governor Ivey gave her speech. Some things came out of it that people are like, wow, okay, that's more than I thought. Other things came out that people are like, wow, I hope not. So, but I'll tell you all about it when we get back from this break. So, yeah, Governor Ivey last night gave her State of the State speech. Surprises, maybe a few. Some things that I'm looking forward to, yeah, a few. Some things that I want to see, like, die in a pile, yeah, a few. I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Talking about number one of the triple dipper here, State of the State. So I mentioned that Governor Ivey gave her State of the State speech last night. She, by the way, that's traditionally always done in what's known as the Old House Chamber. So right now, the State House is across the street from the Capitol building. That's where the legislature meets. All the legislative offices are. But traditionally, if you're looking at the Capitol at the top of Dexter Avenue up on what we call Goat Hill, if you're looking at the legislature, the Capitol building, you see the big dome. And there is, sure enough, on both sides of the dome, there is a House side and a Senate side. And they used that up until, I think, the 80s. And it was, and it's still, it's very cool. It's like, it's museum quality. But that's where Governor Ivey will typically get, or the governor of the Alabama will typically give the State of the State address. So last night, story here on 1819 News, she announced some things that she considers to be her, you know, governor's agenda items. Now, separate branch of government, legislature can do what it wants. More than once, I've seen the governor give a speech and nothing comes of the things the governor's asking for. I've also seen the governor ask for things and they zip right on through. So this depends on the mood and how much work's been done before the session even starts. But Governor Ivey announced last night, for all y'all out there that are for school choice, which is most of you ruffians, that she is absolutely 100% on board with the idea of school choice. Not just a little bit of school choice. If this goes through the way she's talking about, it's going to be a piece of landmark legislation. Now, there's going to be some things that have to get tweaked. I guarantee you the teachers union right now is lining up its lobbyists. But she announced what she's calling the CHOOSE Act, C-H-O-O-S-E. It's an acronym that stands for Creating Hope and Opportunity for Our Students' Education. And it will indeed provide what's known as an ESA, an Education Savings Account, which is like a voucher program. Up to $7,000 per child. That child can be enrolled at any accredited participating private or public school through an education savings account funded by the income tax credit that we're going to be looking at in the legislation. Homeschool families are also in it, not to the same level, which I think is going to be one of the beefs. And here's what I'm concerned about. Poison pills. And I've seen it before, where some folks feel like they're not getting as much as others, and so they become the thing that kills the bill, even though the bill would have done good things for them. They claim it's not enough, and that's, I'm wondering what's going to happen with this, because whereas if you are attending a brick-and-mortar school, public or private, you can get up to $7,000 towards your enrollment and costs. Homeschoolers are going to receive $2,000. So yeah, it's a difference. It is. And I don't know how to explain that. I guess they're assuming that people who are homeschooling don't need brick-and-mortar facilities. They don't have to pay for, you know, bus rides or whatever else. But even still, it's more than it's ever been there for homeschoolers before, I can tell you that. And they're also, it's by the way, it's a $4,000 cap for families. So if you've got two or three kids in homeschool, it can go up to $4,000. $4,000 a year will still go a long way towards buying supplies. So there's that. But the way it works is this. Families can begin participating in the 2025 school year. And they're going to set it up so that the first year, I believe it is, no, first 2 years, it's going to be families with a lower income. And I don't know why they're doing this. They always got to find a way. Well, we'll soften the blow. Just rip that Band-Aid off, man. What are you doing? But yeah, for the first 2 years, if you've got an income that is 300% of the poverty level, which is $93,000 then, if you got an income at $93,000 or below, you can be eligible for your kids to get $7,000 a year to go to a public school or to transition to a new, to a private school or to a new public school. In the third year and beyond, any Alabama family can participate. So the first 2 years, they're kind of softening the blow to see how it goes with fewer people who are income-based in terms of their you know, capabilities or participation. After that, it's all y'all, all God's children who live in Alabama can participate. There will be a cap on it. So up to $100 million a year will be spent on this. That's a lot. Now, keep in mind, we have an $8.3 billion education budget. So this is scratching the surface, man. I see you thinking. What are you thinking over there?
I didn't know that $93,000 was poverty level.
No. That's three times the poverty level.
Oh, three times.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. I was like, okay,
if
well.
That's the poverty level. Then we're all in a world
we got
of
a new bar.
Yeah. No, that's 300% of the poverty level right there. Okay. So that's, it's yeah. Nope, all good.
Yeah,
the poverty level
here
is below $31,000 a year, I think, total.
Okay,
okay, that being said, $93,000, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to suddenly go, I can send my kids to private school? I mean, I can think of a great private school right now not far from us. Well, let's name it, Westbrook Christian School. Westbrook Christian School is a fully accredited K through 12, 2A level high school. And they're awesome. Both my kids graduated from there. My wife worked there for 15 years. And I think that $7,000 a year would send your kid there for all year long. And so that's big doings. It's already gotten the sponsorship of leadership. Senate President Pro Tem Greg Reed and House Speaker Nathaniel Ledbetter are both co-sponsoring the bill. And the bills are being carried. The actual bill sponsors are the two education budget chairs, State Representative Danny Garrett from Trustville and State Senator Arthur Orr from Decatur. What does that signal? Well, number one, it signals that leadership's on board. Number two, the education budget leaders are the ones sponsoring the bill, which means there's a little gatekeeping going on. They don't want people making deals, and they weren't a part of it, so they'll be the ones who carry the bill. But I think it's got a better than average chance of passage. The question is going to become now, how many weak-kneed teachers union bought and sold Republicans will give way to things like testing? And there is a testing component in there, but it's a testing component that shouldn't be that egregious, I don't think, at first blush, and I haven't dug into it yet. But right now, if you are already an accredited, accredited institution of learning, by accreditation processes you already participate in, like the National Council for Private School Accreditation or the American Association of Christian Schools or one of those other partner associations, then you're going to be approved. And the testing is only the testing that is done at the national level anyway. So we'll see where it goes. Right now, first thing out of the gate, state of the state, Governor Ivey says her number one priority for this year is passing this school choice legislation. If we do, and like I said, if I dig into it and find more stuff, I'll tell you, but at first blush, it sounds like we might have a piece of landmark legislation that could go a long way towards changing things for Alabama education. And I hope so. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back and I'll tell you, what else does she say, you think, about gambling? And what about things like, are we getting a bigger grocery tax cut this year? For that matter, what's going to happen with ballot harvesting? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. What happened to the first hour? Who took it? Where'd it go? Somebody took our first hour. It's over already. That's amazing.
That went by real quick.
That went by real quick. All right, hour number two. Here we are. So Marcus from Huntsville, by the way, who just told me he was with, you were with 2-6 Infantry. Appreciate you very much. I was with the 2nd of the 162nd Infantry, 1st Cav. He also made the comment. He says they need to drop the testing. This is on the school choice bill, Marcus from Huntsville says. They need to drop the testing and school audit portions of this bill. Schools already go through accreditation. I don't like the idea of letting the government meddle in the schools any more than I already do. Than they already do. So I agree with that, Marcus, and that's what I'm afraid is going to wind up being the potential poison pill. Now, keep in mind, not every private school has to participate. They're going to have to register and provide their proof of accreditation is what's going to happen. I get that on the one hand, all right, because you can see that once the voucher program begins or the ESAs begin, there could be fly-by-night schools that pop up left and right, like, hey, we're a school, wink, wink, send us your kids. So I understand why they're going to make sure they have real schools with the money. The problem they're going to have, and Marcus has pointed it out, is what is this testing requirement? So it says in this article from 1819 News, the program's testing requirement is a standardized assessment aligned to the curricula of the participating school, a nationally norm-referenced achievement assessment, or a nationally recognized aptitude assessment of the participating school's choice. I don't know what that means yet. I don't know if it means like ACTs and SATs, things that we all accept as part of life, or if there's going to be something they're going to bring in there that says, hey, do you use Common Core? Do it this way. 2 + 2 = 93. You know what I'm saying? If we have this kind of crazy testing that just really is an invasion of the private school's sovereignty, then it's going to wind up killing the bill. And so watch that to be the fight. The other thing that Marcus points out is school audits. All right. Marcus, if you know something I don't know, I have not seen the bill yet. I'm talking about it from bullet points here. But I'm not familiar with an audit. If you're telling me the state has to come in and audit the schools, I'm saying that's a no-go. If you're saying that all it is the state has to, you know, receive from the school something that gives them the ability then to send the money, I don't see what the point would be in objecting to that. All right, next question. What's Ivy say about gambling? Well, in 2010, gambling was evil. Gambling was fool's gold, she said in an article that I had on the show the other day. Well, quote, last night, this year when Alabamians, I can say it like her, this year when Alabamians make their way to the ballot box, she says, I hope they'll be voting on another issue, gaming. In other words, she's for it. So I believe the current proposal being contemplated by the legislature is good for Alabama. I disagree. I disagree vehemently because they're using a straw man argument for one. Yeah, Representative Chris Blackshear of Phoenix City is once again leading the charge to getting expansion of casino gaming across the state of Alabama. He says, we do have an issue. No matter what your stance is on gaming in the state, it's existing, it's unregulated, it's not controlled, nor is it taxed. That's a stupid argument. Please stop saying that. You insult your own intelligence when you say that. Well, it's already happening, and we need to regulate it so we can tax it. What Republican has ever looked at anything in life and said, I'm a Republican, therefore I believe in regulating things and taxing them? At least try to find a more. Stop being so disingenuous. How about this? Just go out there and say, I'm not opposed to gaming, and I want some more money in the state, and I don't care if it comes out of people's pockets from a casino, so let's get her done. Just admit who you are, all right? Just go ahead and say, my name is Chris Blackshear. I'm a Republican, and I'm pro-gambling, and I want to carry this bill. Just say it. Stop pretending it's all about, well, you know, it's unregulated right now. Here's the deal. It is regulated. You know how? Because we have criminal laws on the books, and you don't want to enforce them. So your straw man argument is, well, I guess we better get involved and build out some more government so that we can, you know, regulate it and tax it. So, yeah, what we know about the bill right now is that the bill would, in fact, build out, what do they say here? I'm missing it. I see one part of the article. I highlighted everything in the world. Now I can't find my highlights. Is that it will indeed create a gaming commission, that it will allow for the creation of lotteries, casinos, and internet gaming. That Greg Davis, who is my friend who has a show right after me on my Birmingham stations, Greg Davis, president of ALCAP, which is the Alabama Citizens Action Program, said in a recent blog post, he says, pro-gambling interests are targeting Alabama as an untapped market seeking profits from potential Alabamian losers. Says, we support all attempts to enforce Alabama's current laws, but we do not see how the now common battle cry for regulation is the answer. Regulation is a code word for state-sponsored legalization, he says. That's exactly right. So legislators need to stop pretending and go ahead and say, I'm for gambling. That's what I want to do. Just say it. Quit pretending it's about, well, we're trying to save you. We want to regulate it because it's happening in your community. You just didn't know. People know. How about this? Remember when they cut the grocery tax last year? Well, the grocery tax got cut. It did. I gave them kudos. I did. I'll call good when I see it. It could have been gooder. They didn't make it as good enough as it could have been. Because if you remember, what they did was they cut it from 4 to 3%. We had a 4% sales tax on groceries, one of the only states in the nation that taxed groceries at all. One of the only stations that did tax them that taxed all kinds of groceries and not just some. So we finally got something changed on that. I've been calling for it for years, especially through the Alabama Policy Institute. But we now have a cut that reduced it from 4 to 3% with the promise that if revenues were at a certain level, it would drop another 2%. Well, guess what? Now they're already saying it won't be cut this year. So we're going to stay at 3%. So they're saying right now, and this came out in the State of the State address, is that there has been a flattening of revenues, meaning the federal dollars that came flushing in because of COVID and the people rushing back to the stores after being locked down for so long, that's all beginning to flatten now. And the general fund is flat, revenue almost neutral. They're having like 2%, not quite 2% growth. Anyway, the bottom line is it doesn't look like you're going to wind up getting another tax cut on your groceries this year. Just saying. And that's, by the way, that's the Legislative Fiscal Office giving their report to the legislature. And then, what about ballot harvesting? So this one is considered to be one of the primary bills for Senate leadership. Well, it's already coming to a hearing this week. State Senator Garland Gudger from Cullman, who was on the show, I guess, what, 4 or 5 months ago here in the studio. It's his bill. It is Senate Bill number 1, which means it was the first one that got filed. And State Senate Governmental Affairs Committee is holding a public hearing today, actually. And it's a bill that would make it a crime to help people vote by absentee ballots and to collect up those, like we call it ballot harvesting. And the exceptions would be like for relatives and people who live in the same household, or for those who are disabled and cannot read or write. All said and done, they're having a hearing on that today. We'll see where it goes, but that Senate Bill number 1 is expected to pass, although that was one of the biggest fights last year. So here's where I expect your big fights are going to be, the same things I just mentioned. Teachers Union is going to fight tooth and nail against school choice. Some Republicans are going to be weak-kneed on school choice. And then there's going to be a major fight over gambling. I don't think it's going to pass in the Senate, but it's got to get through the House first because that's where it's originating. Nobody's carrying a companion bill, we call it. And then the next fight's going to be on ballot harvesting, which the Democrats have said they oppose. Why would you oppose that, by the way? There's only one reason why you oppose ballot harvesting, because you want to do ballot harvesting. You cannot possibly use race. I mean, but they will. I saw them when we passed the bill when I was there that required photo ID for voting. You would have thought that we were saying, okay, here's the deal. We're going to require photo ID unless you're black and then you're not allowed to vote anymore at all. That's the way they were acting. Like, what a total insult to anyone in the black community that they would try to argue that it was disenfranchising you. Black people know how to get an ID. They're really, really smart. But they treat them like they're idiots. They treat them like they're children. And so now they're going to do the same thing about the harvesting. Well, you're disenfranchising an entire population. Are you saying that, like, certain demographics of the population don't know how to mail in their own ballot? Are you saying that certain members of the population don't know they can vote absentee? Because if they don't, I'm not sure what else can be done to tell them. And you walking in with a stack of them and going, here, all of y'all sit down at the table. I'll tell you how to vote, wink, wink, and then I'll be glad to take it back for you. I'll tell you what else happens. They put people on a bus to take them to the casino, and they hand out the ballots and say, hey, listen, while we're here, if you could fill these out, we'll turn them back in for you. Or how about the ones that do things like walking through public housing and saying, have you gotten your ballot yet? Well, here's the card. Fill this out. We're going to get your ballot, and then we'll bring it back to you. Oh, cool. We'll need your signature. We'll show up on Saturday, and we'll walk around knocking door to door saying, can we get you to go ahead and hand us your ballot? We'll take it in for you. Oh, by the way, here's who to vote for. They do that stuff. We're trying to stop that. Anyway, there's that. Lastly, I'll just tell you that the big fights are going to find up. They're going to wind up being surprising sometimes. I saw things that every once in a while you get those viral moments where most of the time you can smell certain pieces of legislation coming. You can smell a lottery gambling bill from a mile away. You can smell Medicaid expansion for, you know, six counties over. You can see those things coming 9 months out. And then every once in a while, you get that surprise bill. I'm trying to think of an example. There'll be something that takes over the state house. Like, you're like, what just happened? Where did this come from? We had one bill to require insurance to cover treatments for autism. And it was amazingly controversial. We had a bill for CBD oil to be allowed to be used for treatment of seizures. My God, you'd have thought we were asking for, you know, nuclear weapons to be used. And then I'll never forget the most controversial two bills that came up every single year that had the most rabid followers were, believe it or not, a spay and neuter bill for pets. I kid you not. And then the other one was midwives. Who knew that midwifery and spay and neuters would wind up being the things that could derail an entire legislative session? But I've seen it nearly happen. All right, folks, that's enough of that. There you are, state of the state. The legislature is now in session. We'll be safer in about 105 days when they conclude. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, I'm going to go to number two in the triple dipper here momentarily, but I'll keep up to date with the text messages. Handyman from Caddo, Alabama says armed robbery is not taxed or regulated either. Point well made, sir. They're making so much money off armed robbery. We need to regulate it so we can tax it. Yeah. Awesome. JT from Lacey Springs says, ballot harvesting. Is that why I've seen mail trucks in cemeteries? Well, very well could be. They got to deliver those absentee ballots to the home of record, right? Plot number three, aisle four in the Forest Lawn Cemetery. Jeremy from Huntsville says, I just came to an interesting realization. The federal government currently refuses to adhere to the laws on the books regarding immigration at our southern border, where the state government refuses to adhere to the laws on the books regarding gambling. One could draw parallels. One could indeed. You know what? We need to regulate our southern border so we can tax it. What does that mean? I guess. Anyway. John from Harvest. So do you think ballot harvesting would end up finding ballots for people still on the voter rolls but no longer live in the state? with all the election chicanery nationwide, I'm almost to the point of supporting Purple Fingers. And Purple Fingers, he's referring to like the foreign elections that we've had in Afghanistan and Iraq, where for the first time, people would have to, and they would vote, and they would have to dip their finger in a purple dye, and it would like it would stay on there for like 24 hours or more. But that way, they couldn't come back and vote again because their finger was already purple. And I'm for that, man, just saying. But John says, do you think it would still find people on the voter rolls? So ballot harvesting, ballot harvesting is going to have a live signature, supposedly. But the voter rolls in Alabama, we take great pains to do what's called purging or cleaning up the voter rolls. We cross compare to like the Department of Labor and to the Department of Revenue and to Social Security and Medicaid to make sure that we have a live person currently domiciled in the state. So anyway, yeah, Purple Fingers. DT from Elkmont says, are we going to legalize prostitution now as well? It occurs, it's happening, but it's unregulated and it's currently untaxed. Thank you, DT. That has been my favorite analogy for quite some time now. It's prostitution. We know it's out there. It's happening. It's illegal. We need to regulate it so we can tax it. God, Gary from Decatur says, now we know why the new gaming bill was handled in the legislature the way it was. She must think she still has a substantial amount of political capital in her last term. Either that or she doesn't care, bro. That's the other side of this. Is Governor Ivey is term limited. I suspect she's going to retire from public life in full at the end of this term. Being term limited means that she is somewhat of a lame duck, meaning she could care less. If she wants to care less, she could care less. I don't want to say Governor Ivey could care less. But what I am saying is this. She is not bound to the question that politicians always ask themselves, will it hurt my reelection chances? She's not looking for that. All right. Hey, let me jump in here on Dipper Numero Dos. So I'm calling this one, Make That Make Sense.